Hi, welcome to the Strategy Session Podcast. I'm Chris Ruvo for ASI's Counselor Magazine. What are the keys to effective leadership? Here with us today to answer that question is Gene Geiger, CEO of the Top 40 distributorship that bears his last name. The 2018 Marvin Spike Lifetime Achievement Award winner has been a leader at the family-owned firm for decades. But that's not all. He's also helped lead the way for the $23 billion promotional product sector through his service on industry boards and by helping spearhead industry-wide initiatives. Gene, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Chris. When you talk about this, I'm hoping that I can come up with a gem or two. I'll do my best.
All right, we're confident that you will. So first question here, what type of leadership style have you found to be most effective? And just tell us a bit about what that is and why it can be effective if you execute it properly.
Well, first of all, full books are written on this kind of subject, and courses in grad school are devoted to it. It's pretty hard to put it into a few words. Let me just say that everyone's got their own style of managing, and to some extent, one's management style reflects one's personality. So, as it relates to me, at least, I want to work with people who are smart, but also who are very trustworthy. Mm-hmm. I want colleagues who understand and are in sync with our company values, which means that if they're in sync with our values and how we do things, then it seems to me that they're going to make decisions that are in sync and that we're all deciding and pulling together in the same direction. If you're not pulling in one direction, you're going at cross purposes. So you've sort of got to buy into what the system and the company is about. As it relates to me as a leader, I must confess, I'm not a very good order giver. I tend to be a listener and a collaborator, and an enabler and a teacher. I'm not one who's good at saying do this and do that. I might add that one thing I try to be is I try to be consistent and transparent. And if I'm open and I'm consistent, then it seems to me that my colleagues in turn will trust me as I am trusting them. So when we're working together, we're collaborating on objectives, discussing options, but then it's up to my colleagues to figure out how to get the job done. It's up to them to execute, although checking back with me if they need to. If he or she makes a mistake, and everyone who's in management makes mistakes, then my expectation is that they're going to figure out how to fix it. And one way or the other, once my colleague makes a decision, then I support that person. So if we're all in sync, if we're all trusting each other, if we should all be pulling in the same direction. And if we're all pulling in the same direction, then the organization should be gaining more forward momentum than not and making progress.
Well, that's really well said, Gene. I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of with that answer. I think that
well. Okay. Well, if you're the judge, I'm going with you.
All right. Very, very, very good. So, next question here, kind of looked at from a slightly different angle. What, as you see it, are some of the biggest mistakes that business leaders can make? Are there things that you've noticed in your personal experience, or that you've seen other leaders do that are just downright ineffective?
Well, I guess it's sort of I've sort of touched upon it. It seems to me that any leader, any manager, needs to feel that he or she is trusted and supported, and not second guessed. If you don't feel that way, if you feel undermined, if you will, you're clearly going to be afraid to make decisions, or you're going to end up hiding things such as mistakes or failures, and So you've got to support people. People who work for you need to feel that they can tell you the bad as well as the good. And if there is question about that, then communication stops, learning ends, and you can't make things better. You can't develop people. So support, trust, encouragement, and even when one makes a mistake, one needs to be supported so that you take that learning and grow.
Very well said. And another one here. You've been open about talking about sometimes where you've come up short as a leader. It's something that I think happens to everyone. And we've chatted in the past about some of those things. What are some of the lessons that you've learned from those experiences? And how, generally speaking, do you think leaders should approach failure to make something productive from it?
Well, I am clearly flawed as a leader. I've got my weaknesses. Without a doubt, I do too much myself. I'm not a good delegator, and I know it. I also probably, anyone here probably would say that I probably give people too much of the benefit of the doubt and probably don't hold people sufficiently accountable. I know that those are things that I am not done so well. So when I failed, I've generally speaking have waited too long to let a failing person go or to pull the plug on something that should have been ended. Other people can be too quick and too impatient, but it's certainly equally bad to be too slow to recognize and accept what needs to be done, hoping that somehow things will get better or somehow things will change. So I think both myself and probably most managers just sort of sit back and let things go when in their heart of hearts they know they should have made a move. And I know that I've done that. Chris, you and I have spoken about we had a manufacturing facility here, and we made product, and I personally didn't want to do what had to be done, and I should have done it sooner, and it was costly, but the end result was the same. It just should have been done 5 years earlier.
So I guess the takeaway there is that, you know, it's important to recognize areas, if you are a leader, areas where you're not as strong, and try to work on them. And then the next time you approach a situation like that, it sounds like you have that knowledge and you try to operate a little differently. Is that a fair takeaway from that?
I think yes. But I would add that I know that just behaviorally, I'm not as competent at some things as some others here, and I will tend to have my colleagues who I know are better than I am at some things take the lead where I know that I'm not as good. So in other words, an organization in totality is not an organization. It's not just one person. It's the sum of a number of people. And in this organization, there are some people that are better than I at some things, and I will tend to have them do that which I'm not so good at.
Makes a ton of sense. All right, so switching gears a little bit here, you know, as an industry leader, you have your finger on the pulse of where things are kind of headed. How do you see the industry evolving over the next several years to decade, and what do distributors need to do to thrive?
Boy, everyone is talking about that sort of thing, and no one has all the answers. All of us are trying to figure out where things are going, and what you know today or what you think you know today changes next week or next month or next year. So I don't know. First of all, technology in all of its various forms, including e-commerce, but not only e-commerce, changes how business is done for everybody. It just it's inevitable. And you can see it at the extreme with an Amazon, but it changes for everybody because how people do business, how they learn about things is different than it was 10 and 20 years ago. So clearly those who cannot adapt technologically are going to go away or are going to be gobbled up, even though technology opens up opportunities for those who can figure out how to put the new pieces together. As I said, buyers have information that they didn't have years ago. So if all we're doing is showing product, which buyers know as much about as we do, you can't be successful. You've got to be offering more value than that. And frankly, I saw or heard of a statistic the other day where something on the order of 75% of the buying decision is done prior to a buyer or a customer getting in touch or engaging with a salesperson. So when you've got buyers armed with knowledge and a sense of what they want to do, you better be doing a whole lot more than saying, hey, I saw a new pen at the trade show. Do you want to know about it?
Sure.
Beyond that, look at the money that's flowing into our industry at the high level with big suppliers and big distributors. You've got public owners, public company owning distributors and suppliers. You've got private equity flowing into this industry, spreading money around and looking for opportunities. And that clearly is going to change things. The technology, the money, compliance, all sorts of things, buying power, all suggest to me that small companies are going to have to jump into the arms of networks or service providers or whoever whomever can help them with their technological needs, their buying needs, their compliance requirements. Little companies cannot do all this stuff on their own. Now, you may have boutique firms that do some things very well, but in general, the big are going to get bigger, and the smaller are going to have to find safe havens in the arms of larger networks or organizations.
Well said. All right. Last question here. That's how you see it playing out on a macro level, so to speak. What are some strategies that Geiger is pursuing to remain an industry leader?
Well, part of me is a little bit worried. We're a privately held company, and our resources are what we earn in profit plus whatever we can borrow, and so we are we're watching what goes on with a reasonable amount of caution. Having said that, we have a number of different businesses within this larger business, but somehow amongst all of this, we've got to figure out how we can enable our salespeople to provide value-added services to their clients beyond product, if you will. And we've got to tie all of that together. In other words, they've got to know their customers better than ever before and be able to solve problems for their customers. If they can solve problems creatively and effectively, they have a purpose inside any given customer's offices. But then we, as a larger organization, better have really good systems, really good technology, so that we deliver on the promises of our salespeople. So we've got to find some combination of human capability, skills, competency, problem-solving ability with really, really good technology efficiency, so that things go beautifully well, we fulfill our promises, and products get delivered to far-flung places in the most expeditious manner. And beyond that, we've talked. You and I have talked about our acquisition of the BTC Group in the UK.
Yep.
We have an increasing number of customers, large customers, that are looking for global solutions, and that's an area that relatively few distributors can play in the future. But there's a significant need for a handful of firms who can help a large customer, whether it be in the Middle East or Australia or in Europe or in South America. And so we've got to figure out how we can build out a global footprint so that when someone approaches us, and we say, yeah, you're over there, we can take care of that because we've got boots on the ground in Germany, in Sydney, in Sao Paulo.
Makes sense. All right, Gene, thank you so much for being with us to discuss leadership, to discuss where the industry's headed. Everybody, that was Gene Geiger, of course, CEO of Top 40 Distributorship Geiger and the 2018 Marvin Spike Lifetime Achievement Award. Gene, thanks again so much.
My pleasure, Chris. You take care. You